Devlin's Pirate Radio Show. And it's another episode. I'm really excited today because I actually have a co-host with me today. I've decided that I'm going to call them co-hosts because, I don't know, guests, you know, they're a guest in my home, yes, but I'm sharing the air and, you know, they're doing pretty much what I'm going to be doing. So I've decided when I have people on, I'm going to call them co-hosts. And I'm really excited because as much as I love talking and taking over an hour by myself, I love also hanging out with people and talking. And my very first co-host is, I would call him an acquaintance. But I'm hoping we, you know, kind of bond through this and we eventually become good friends. Because I think he mentioned he kind of thinks we might be kindred spirits. And I think that's really awesome. I first met him. I went to see a comedy troupe he was in called the Ugly Sticks. They were really big in the Hamilton area. They might have expanded other places, I'm not sure, but they did a lot of shows in this area, and they had quite a fan following for a while, and I got to see several of their shows, and I thought they were all amazingly talented. The man who's sitting next to me, he's obligated not to talk until I mention his name. I always thought he kind of stood out. He was his own person, and he stood out. Like, they were all amazing. But, I don't know, he's funny and kind of cute, and I like that. He's enjoying this. So, anyhow, I always admired him, hoped one day we'd work together, and, but, you know, I call him acquaintance because we, you know, I talk to him after shows. But, you know, anybody who's in the arts knows you have to kind of talk to everybody. You know, your grandma came out for this, you know, and, you know, stuff like that. So you can't really talk a lot. And we've talked on Facebook, but again, you don't really get that feel of hanging out with a good friend. So after my first podcast, he sent me a wonderful email about how he had to be my first guest. He said, I will hound you. I will do anything. Like, most people would probably, you know, have called, you know, some stalker, you know, police or something. But me needing a nice ego boost, I took it as, hey, this guy sounds cool. But what I loved most about it is after getting this really intense thing about, I loved your show. I think we're kindred spirits. I really need to be your first guest. He sent me a little email after saying, and I apologize if I was too pushy, but I really want this. So I sent him some things and said, okay, let's get our schedules going. I would like to introduce my first co-host. He got the job, Mr. Doug Miller.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad, I'm ecstatic. I'm over the moon to be your first co-host.
Now, I like to talk a little bit about me to start things
Absolutely.
Off. But what was it about what you heard that you wanted to?
It was a really relaxed feel that you had. It was almost like you were having a conversation with the person on the other side of the computer, as it were. I didn't feel that I was with a screen or that I was listening to somebody's podcast. I felt like I was having a cup of coffee with somebody at, you know, your local coffee shop, and we were just across from each other over at a table, and we were just having a conversation like we are now. And I think that's what originally drew me in, was like I was talking to a long lost friend, you know, that we were just catching up on something new.
That's awesome. Not just because he's telling good things about me, but that's kind of what I was going for. I've had trouble coming up with ways how to end my show, because it just kind of ends abruptly. And then on the last one, I just started saying, until I talk to you again, or I'll talk to you soon.
Right.
And I remember Corda, who helps me with the show, said, that works, because it sounds like you're conversing with the other people.
It's like being on the phone with someone saying,
right,
you know, okay, well, we'll talk soon, and, you know, have a great night.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you for that. That's awesome. So, Doug, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born, raised right here in Hamilton. I was born, I believe, right up at St. Joe's, up the mountain. Lived here for my whole life. I made a brief sojourn to Toronto in my early 20s, but, yeah, I've been a Hamiltonian my entire life.
What was the Toronto years like?
The Toronto years, mysterious. They were wild and crazy. Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd would have been very proud. I remember we used to have a party that was dubbed the Doug Till Dawn parties. And we had a series of these parties. And if you were new to this party, if you got the invite to come to a Dougie Till Dawn, you inevitably were given a marker or some kind of writing utensil, and you signed our apartment walls, or you drew a picture, or you wrote a poem, perhaps. Nice. And so, yeah, it became quite a little, I don't know what you would call it exactly.
That sounds fun. It sounds like I want an invite to one of these.
It was a tremendous time in my life. Also, a fairly dark time in my life. I went through a major depression in the latter years when I was out there.
I can relate.
Yes.
What is it with comedians that... I don't consider myself a comedian. I know I do comedy shows, but I really feel it weird when I say I'm a comedian. But most comedians I meet have a dark thing, and I think that's why I'm attracted to them, because they're funny, but you know that they've had a struggle or a...
I think part of it comes from knowing how deeply you can be hurt, and that dark part of your soul doesn't want others to feel that part of what you feel. For me, laughter, hearing people laugh, it's the best drug that I've ever had.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I cannot get enough of it. And when I know that I can, you know, let people just throw off kind of the shackles of, you know, everyday life and just cut loose and have some really good belly laughs for, you know, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever it takes, I come away from it feeling like I've helped them in some small fashion.
Yeah. And they've helped you in
they
return.
Did. Yeah. It's a very symbiotic relationship.
What were you doing before the Ugly Sticks and you came to Hamilton? Did you do comedy? You mentioned Second City.
Yeah, I did my improv training through levels A through E in Second City, and auditioned for their master class, and they said, "You're taking over too many scenes. Go back and do a scene study course."
Did they really tell you that?
Yeah, basically. You know, I mean, they were much nicer about it, but they told me, you know, you're kind of leading a lot, and you need to take a scene study class so that you can learn that give and take kind of thing. So I did, and I just kind of never went back after that. I started doing Shakespeare with Hamilton Urban Theater here in Hamilton. Okay. They're a great company for community theater, and that's where I met, you know, six other very eclectic people that all just kind of got me at the time.
Of course, you're talking about the Ugly Sticks.
I am, yes.
Phenomenal. I loved seeing your shows. And I loved that, I think I mentioned to you earlier, that there was, you all seem like your own people. Like, you seem like people that wouldn't necessarily hang out together, but it all came together and worked, and I love that about...
You're very right. We were all individual personalities, just kind of bonded through this Shakespeare company. And Tyler Brent and myself are enormous fans of Kids in the Hall. And it was one of those things that, you know, we were standing up on one of the risers in between scenes, and he leans over to me and he starts quoting one of the sketches from Kids in the Hall. And instinctively, I start responding with the, you know, the opposing lines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're recreating a Kids in the Hall sketch on one of these risers, and we kind of looked at each other, and you? Yeah, you? And it was just one of these kismet-type moments.
Nice.
Where we just kind of clicked, and we started to develop, and was like, well, we want this person, and this person, and this person, and I don't know, it all kind of came together at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember coming to the shows, and they were sellouts, a lot of them.
In the first few years, it always seemed we were packing the house, and it was a very good ego boost. It made me feel like, yeah, that's right, I'm funny, I'm the king of funny, you know. But
it is a drug.
It is. It was highly addictive, and in those first few years, we were having so much fun. Not that we didn't have fun throughout the later years, yeah. but it was also very new at the time. And we were flying by the seat of our pants. That we just, it was just, we wanted more and more. And, you know, I felt gluttonous at times, you know, because I wanted to just feed that comedy, you know, monster inside of me.
Did you feel it became almost like a business? Is that, because sometimes I find, like, when people are together for a while, they're almost a whole different aspect shows up. Like, it's not just about us hanging out, you know, let's do funny shit. It becomes like a business.
It did, you know, and it became less about, you know, the creating of the funny and more about the, okay, well, we need, you know, this many sketches so that we can create this show because we've booked the staircase for March. This is our, you know, St. Patrick's time of the year. So let's get X amount of sketches and, you know, run them. I mean, there was always the camaraderie and the, you know, I'm hanging out with my good friends. But it became more, and at times it became more about just the social aspect,
yeah.
almost, you know, than the business of it, to be quite honest, you know, as much as it became more of a business and we have to get, you know, X amount of things out, it became more about, I really just want to see these people because after this ends, I'm going to see less and less of them. And that's kind of what's happened over the years.
You know? Yeah. But you had a great run. What was it? 8 years?
8 years. Yeah.
And you made so many people laugh, and you, like, had, wasn't there an Ugly Sticks Junction, which is your
Ugly
fan
Sticks
club?
Fanboy Junction, yeah, which was on Facebook. Yeah, it was our first Facebook page, and we put all of our videos there and all of our pictures, and we had upwards of, you know, 400 members at one point. Like, it was so much fun, and I will always have fond memories of doing it.
Excellent. Do you prefer sketch over improv, or improv sketch?
You know what, I when I was in the midst of doing the improv, it was, I ate, slept, and breathed improv. It was all I wanted to do.
Been there, I know.
Yeah, you know, and then...
You know when you're addicted.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's like a serious drug.
Exactly. And when I started doing sketch comedy, ever since I was a kid, I've been watching Saturday Night Live, and that was kind of my bread and butter growing
yeah.
up. And I always knew that was something that I aspired to do. I just really didn't know how to go about doing it. You know,
yeah.
how do you write a sketch? What makes a sketch? What's, you know, what's a premise? You know, I didn't even understand what a premise was
yeah.
at one point. And so they have equal places in my heart, but I think if I were going to lean more towards one or the other, I think I would lean more towards sketch comedy. It is kind of my heart and soul. Like, I mean, I grew up, I used to stay up late at night and watch Monty Python long after I should have been asleep in bed, you know, on this
yeah.
little, you know, TV that my mom and dad allowed us to have in our room, you know. I never fully understood it at the time.
I'm just, see, the kindred spirit thing. I was just going to say, I was so young, Monty Python, so many of the stuff went over my head.
It did.
And when I rewatch it now, I laugh because it's like, oh, I wouldn't
it.
Have got that.
No.
But I love that you mention that because there must be, you just know it's funny, you
yes.
know, and it's like, oh, I should be, my dad's laughing. So yeah. I, you know, that's, yeah. yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I, like you say, I didn't quite get it at the time, but there was something about it where you were like, I know that's funny. And I don't know why I'm laughing right now, but it is like, and you come back to it, like you say, yeah. years later.
Now, have you done any other projects that during that time that, like, did you do short films or any other plays or something?
You know what, I did a few short films with Craig F. Watkins during that time frame, like, over those 8 years. I did a couple of films with him. Craig is a fantastic filmmaker, and he was a lot of fun to work with. I didn't do too many other things other than the Ugly Sticks during that time.
Yeah.
You know, it was all, I, like I say, it was what I, it consumed me.
Yeah.
You know, and I was, in the first little while, I was doing a lot of the booking and scheduling a lot of the rehearsals. And so I was kind of doing the business end right from
yeah.
the get-go. So it was kind of left to me to kind of do all of those things. So it was every waking moment of my life, you know, for that time, you know.
Well, it was well-deserved. It entertained a lot of people.
Well, thank you. I had the most fun doing it.
Well, that's great. What did I want to touch on? Now, you got married. And have two kids?
I do. I have two boys. Awesome. Two boys, 8 going on 9 and 3 going on 4.
Now, did you kind of take a sabbatical from comedy?
I did.
Was that planned or just you just...
It was planned. Rebecca is my wife.
And your kid's name?
My oldest is Jacob and my youngest is Rylan.
Okay.
When we were discussing Rylan and whether or not we wanted to have another baby, it was very much, well, I would like you to make sure that, you know, you're focused on family too, and I wholeheartedly agreed to that because, like, I mean, my family, you know, as much as comedy is a big part of my life, my family is also, you know, as big a part, if not bigger, than comedy, you know.
Very.
So, yeah, it was planned.
Good reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do get the itch every once in a while.
I do.
You were just
saying that beforehand. as much as I go away from it, I'm never fully gone. I don't think I will ever be fully gone. There is...
You're too creative. Like, you probably get ideas from just even just little things happening around the house or in life, right?
I will drive home from work some days and, you know, just push record on my voice memo thing because something sparks an interest in, oh, this is funny. I've got to talk about this, you know, like I'll be performing later tonight, and that's how a lot of the sketches for tonight, nice. I kind of came up with on the car on the drive home, you know, when I'm by myself.
Do you think performing tonight, because how long has it been since you've performed?
I'd say it's probably been about 3-4 months. Yeah, Tyler and I did, we go by the name Pork Chop Express now, which any fans of Big Trouble in Little China will get that reference. We did a Christmas show, and before that, we were part of the Hamilton Sketch Pack up at the Zoetic on Concession, which is the old Movie Palace. So it's been a few months, and, you know, so I've got to shake off a little bit of the rust, but yeah, it's a yearning.
Do you think the drug's going to hit tonight?
It always does.
Of course, when I say tonight, this is probably airing a week later,
that's
so
right.
We won't promote it, but look for it in the future, I'm sure.
We don't need to promote it, but you know what? There's always that need. It's an insatiable, unquenchable thirst, you know?
Do you think... when the kids get a little older, it's something you'll return to regularly? Or you're going to find a different outlet?
I would love to be able to do that. I'm not sure it will be the same thing. I'm not sure if it will take a different voice or even creative outlet, you know what I mean, at the time. My boys still have a little bit of growing up to do before I can kind
They're
of commit
still,
to
yeah.
myself to doing it kind of full-time again.
Yeah.
And by that time, you know, I may, you know, Rebecca may say, you know, like, I want to travel, and, you know, I'll maybe become a world traveler instead. Who knows,
well, you know. That's good. Hopefully you can find a way to get the creativity out, though.
You know what, I don't think I will ever stop writing.
Yeah.
I may, you know, pass it on to people that, you know, if I was fortunate enough for somebody to say, you know what, I'll perform this for you, you know, I would... you know, write for other people too.
Nice, nice. So it might be there, but that's good that you don't know what it is. But
I don't know what
you
it
know
is,
it's,
but it's something will be there. I have it's just inbred inside of me. There is a need to create and to be creative, and it's been there since I was in kindergarten, like all the way back to being 4 or 5 years old, however old I was. When they cast me as Rudolph in the Christmas play, and all I
the lead
right, all I had to do was prance around and dance around, and I will never forget that moment because all the parents were laughing. You know, the laugh. Oh, that's so cute, and that's so wonderful, and lovely, and adorable. I ran from that stage, all the way back down the hall to my kindergarten homeroom, and cried my face off because. I was mortified. These people are all laughing.
Yeah, you weren't sure what was happening.
I did not know. And my kindergarten teacher, as lovely as she was, she came back. And in that moment, she explained to me that they were not laughing at me, but they were laughing with me. They were laughing because I was giving them something to laugh about. They weren't laughing at me and making fun of me. They just thought what I was doing was funny, and that was it. Comedy bug bit me. From there on out,
That's a lovely story. I like that story.
I've been performing ever since, and I've had a need to perform ever since. And it's my need. I want people to like me, love me. I yearn for your applause, you know.
Well, I'll remind you every once in a while. You got anything coming up that I might see you in? Now, before we cut from our first segment, I'm hearing a lot of ching on your thing. What is this? Are you doing a commercial for CH?
It was a local promotional ad for their cha-ching promotion, which they've got going on. And
yeah, I think it's actually clever. CHCH hasn't done a lot of clever things, but I love their cha-ching because they can actually use the CH in it.
A mutual friend of the producer contacted a mutual friend. He contacted me, and I contacted her, and the rest, as they say, is history. I went in and shot it over the course of, like, you know, a few hours one morning, and, you know, they bought me out for a few $100s. And
good stuff.
Yeah, it was.
They have a few $100 in there. I'm impressed.
Yeah, they did not have a budget for it, but they somehow got me some money, and, yeah, I enjoyed it.
So if the new Tiny Talent Time is canceled, you can blame Doug, because they blew their hundreds of dollars.
Well, I was never so sad as when I felt my 15 minutes of fame fleeting as I heard the radio ad, which used to have my voice in it, does not have my voice in it anymore. Oh, and I had a little bit of a moment on the way home one day.
Well, maybe there's people listening now. That's that guy that used to be.
I was the cha-ching guy.
That's awesome. Anyhow, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to have you chat some more. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about a topic I think we both love. Saturday morning TV. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Doug Miller and me. Alright, we're back, and I'm here with Doug Miller. Of course, this is probably only like a minute song in there, but you never know. It could have been 2 hours. You never know. I could have had dinner, but we have something in common. We really love classic TV and stuff like that. So I wanted to talk about one of my favorite topics because, you know, I don't have a lot of TV channels. And when I turn on Saturday morning television on regular cable, I hope it's better with satellites and stuff, but I cannot believe what is on. It's like, you know, you've got the infomercials, you've got the starving children. That's always fun for kids to be eating cereal too. And Saturday mornings for me, and I'm assuming for you, that was big deal.
It was a ritual.
You would come down and eat your cereal of choice and sit there for hours because that was the only entertainment. They didn't really have, till the 90s and stuff, they started putting in weekdays and stuff.
Yes.
But you'd have, like, educational things. But so, they don't even show repeats of Littlest Hobo anymore on Saturday morning, and I couldn't believe that. Once Hobo was gone, I knew we were in trouble. So I wanted to talk to you about some of your favorite classic cartoon shows, because I know one of the things we bonded of, and I'm probably going to have to make sure you don't sneak out with it, I have a picture of Hilarious House of Frightenstein that Doug really loved when I posted it up on my thing. It's a limited, I think they only made, if I could read it from here, something like 50 of them or something. Wow. Yeah, and the guy signed it and stuff. It's beautiful. And you were a big fan of Hilarious House of Frightenstein?
I was. I still am. And if there was one thing I covet more than anything in your house, it is that photo.
Well, you don't get a lot of merchandise. No. This was a show that was filmed at CHCH, you know, cha-ching, so there you go. And, like, it's awesome to me that this show actually, like, it blows me away. Because when I was a kid, I never knew. It aired on Channel 11. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's filmed right here in Hamilton, and you got Vincent Price and Billy Van, incredible.
Yeah, it was. And Billy Van blew me away. After it was in syndication, on like a daily basis when they were showing them on a daily, you know, he was a tremendous talent, you know. And Vincent Price was, he is the king of creepiness, you know. He was tremendous. It was a big part of my growing up, you know.
It was amazing that they actually got Vincent Price. Like, it gave the show such validity.
It gave it some, quote-unquote street cred, if you will.
It does. I admit, Billy Van, I think a lot of people said he should have been a lot bigger than he was, but I think he was a local boy and he didn't, because he was on like the Sonny and Cher show and stuff like that, but I don't think he ever he was quite happy with just what he had.
I think he was happy with his own little niche. I really do. I don't think he craved, you know, being able to venture too far away from his roots.
Yeah. What was your favorite bit in Hilarious? Mine was Griselda. I thought he was brilliant as Griselda just because when I watch it now, it's the same thing, but he makes it a little different all the time. And then he had that part where he'd drink what he was making.
Yes.
And I always, as a kid, remember waiting for him to make that face. Because he'd do the... And then he'd turn around and do pretty much what was always the same face. But I loved it as a kid. Hitting the pot on his head, the whole works. Did you have a favorite character?
It was a toss-up. I mean, all of them were fantastic. But I think... It was a toss-up for me between Bawana Clyde Batty.
Ooga booga.
When he did the little cheek thing where he would... I made sure that I was able to do that, you know. And for those of you that can't see through the magic of podcasting, he would puff his cheek in a rapid motion, and I went over the moon for that. And...
That dance he had at the end, too, with the tribal drums. And he'd always do that little dance. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
As dry and as boring as other people who I've spoken to found it, I adored the librarian.
You know what? When I was a kid, I always, like, cringed because it was always felt like it was a 20-minute segment.
Yes, it did.
But as I get older, I really do appreciate what he did.
I think I appreciate that sketch, like that character, more now that I'm older than I did, because you're right. As a child, like as a kid watching, I was like, oh, the librarian, he's going to say Hickory Dickory Dock again, and it's about the mouse, and how come he takes so long to tell like a poem that is 30 seconds long?
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. As you get older, you appreciate the nuance of that character a little more, I think.
Other things I appreciate about Hilarious House of Frightenstein, and I could do a whole segment on this.
Of course, yes.
Probably will in many times. But I love that the production quality was pretty impressive. Yeah. Like, their sets.
I was surprised. It was a big set.
Yeah, it was great. And I went to the Hamilton Comic Con, and they said that one of the stories they said was they actually learned all the makeup in New York City. They actually flew, I don't know if it was Billy Van went there, but the people who were going to do the makeup, these were, like, professional people that worked on, like, I think it was the place where they did the Johnny Carson show.
Wow.
And they actually learned, like, makeup from the top people, and then they flew back and learned how to do it for the show.
Brought the craft back to the show. Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It was good. Now, I'm picturing you, like, what was your cereal of choice?
I was a big fan of Captain Crunch, even though it cut the roof of my mouth over and over and over again. It's tasty, though. I loved it.
Captain I still Crunch. Enjoy it. Do you enjoy it?
I do, still, okay, as an adult. Know. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm a
I always a big assume fan everybody's healthy, and then when I find out they're not, then I start confessing I'm not either.
No, I'm largely a sweets eater, and... Yeah, you'll often find me late at night, 11 o'clock, with a bowl of cereal, resting on my stomach.
It's the ultimate comfort food, yes. I think.
No, my brother and I would, we would go downstairs Saturday mornings, and we would sit on the couch together and curl up together, and we each have a bowl of cereal on our laps, and we would just, you know, it was between the big three at that time, NBC and CBS and ABC.
Right.
You know, Fox didn't come in until a little bit later.
A little bit later, yeah.
You know, but we would, you know, just... watch them glued like little, you know, junkies, you know, getting a Saturday morning fix, because like you said earlier, at the time, that was pretty much the only time you had like a good block of cartoons. Yeah. They didn't start the weekday afternoon blocks until the early 90s and throughout the 90s.
And right. And now, of course, they have stations where you can dedicated, be 3 in the morning yeah. and you can watch something.
Well, and did you know that they actually don't have a Saturday morning block anymore? And that's why you see all the infomercials and everything. There is no Saturday morning cartoon block anymore.
I know.
And it's, to me, that's a travesty.
I know. I remember when they, like, even in the later years when they even, like, NBC was doing, like, the Saved by the Bells and stuff. At least it was
something.
Right. And when I learned that some were even doing news again, and, like, and I do, too, because Saturday morning was a ritual.
Yes.
And it got to the point where the cartoon stopped. That's when you went out and played.
That's
and
right.
Hang out and
about
stuff.
About 12:30, you know, the cartoons that you didn't really care as much about started coming on. So I was like, okay, let's get dressed and go.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful day outside. Let's go.
Once the matinee movie came on. They used to show some horrible. Do your kids still watch the Saturday morning? You try to keep that tradition?
I do try to. When we get up on Saturday mornings, it's let's have a bowl of cereal and watch some cartoons for the first. I mean, when we were watching, it was from 8 till, 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
I try to get my boys, like, maybe a couple hours in.
That's good, yeah.
You know, like...
TV was our babysitter. We don't have that now. Now they have the internet tablets and all that stuff now, but...
Yes, newfangled technology has taken away the beauty of the cartoon. But like you were saying, there are channels that are dedicated solely to, watching cartoons. And Teletoon Retro, I still try to get my kids to watch some of the older cartoons that I used to watch growing up.
Does it work?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on what it is. It's hit and miss.
So what were some of your favorite cartoons? I know there's a lot.
There were so many to choose from. Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh, yes.
I was a big fan of him. The Blue Falcon and Dino Mutt.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Space Ghost.
Yes,
I used to love Space Ghost. Oy, that show, I thought, like, those were my, while I was still watching, Batman 66 in syndication, those were generally on Sundays.
You know,
at the time in syndication, but... those were kind of my first superheroes.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And, I watched a lot of the Hanna-Barbera collection.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo. Sure. Like, the fact that Scooby-Doo is still running now, like, in so many different forms is incredible. Now, I still prefer the Where Are You, Scooby-Doo, the originals.
The original.
Which is, there isn't as many as you thought. I always thought there was tons, and then...
There's only a few seasons.
Yeah, but there was, Scooby-Doo just came back and back, and I love that Scooby-Doo is still big in our culture.
My 3-year-old prefers the Where Are You Scooby-Doo to the Mystery Incorporated version that's out now.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, it's a classic, with the, sometimes we would have got away with it if it wasn't for the,
meddling kids.
Yeah, and I always love these big mysteries, because there was only usually two people to pick from, and one was kind of a sinister one, and it was just crazy. Like, I loved it. The zaniness of
Absolutely. It. Now, what about yourself? What were some of your staple cartoons?
Well, sometimes Flintstones.
Sure.
Now, that was a nighttime show. That was kind of the Simpsons of its time. But they did air other versions of it on... And I always liked any version, even when Pebbles and Bam Bam grew up. And
I didn't like... I liked
it as a kid. When I rewatched it, I'm like, this is horrible.
The one where they were getting married, I was okay with. There was one where they were... I don't know if it was Flintstone Kids or...
Oh, Flintstone... I wasn't a big fan of that. That
Flintstone
was,
Kids, I was like, okay, forget
Everybody
it.
Everybody was kids, though.
Yes.
That was... I don't know who started that. Muppet Babies. I don't know who I should blame,
And I enjoyed the Muppet Babies to a point.
They were... I think they were kind of fun. I liked them because they parodied a lot of movies.
Yes, that's what I enjoyed the most about them. What I didn't like about them was Skeeter. I hated Skeeter.
Was that Scooter's twin sister or brother?
Who the hell is Skeeter? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You are not a part of the Muppets. You're not a part of my Muppets.
Yeah, well, they had to add one more kind of thing. And I'm a big Miss Piggy fan. It was just... I liked her diva days.
She was a little clingy for me, but...
Yeah, but I liked, the classic where she was hitting on every, celebrity that came on. And Muppet Babies, she was just bitchy or something.
Yeah,
if you can say somebody was bitchy. I also like Super Friends. You know, I know a lot of people like the darkness of all these superhero movies now, but you know what? I love the old Super Friends with Aquaman and Wonder Woman and Superman.
Absolutely, and the announcer's voice.
Oh, absolutely. That's classic.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, I love that guy.
Oh, my God, yeah. And I, you know, eventually they tried to get a little bit deeper, but you know, I even have a soft spot for Zan and Jaina, you know. And,
or
you know,
Marvin
as much
and Wendy.
As people, yeah, Marvin and Wendy, now you're going to the early years, yeah. Wonder Time. And, you know, some of my favorite things about, I always like that, I'm a big Aquaman supporter. I know a lot of people think he's lame. I always remind him, King of the Sea,
pretty
big. But I always liked when they'd go on these big missions, and in the old Super Friends, they'd have, like, Batman in his plane with Robin and Wonder Woman in the Invisible Jet. Superman's flying. Sometimes Aquaman was on a little water scooter.
Yes.
And he's, like, all the time in the world. And I'm thinking to myself, you can swim really fast, and you're on this little thing that looks like it's going, like...
You could ride a giant seahorse.
Right.
Why would you ride the precursor to what is now the Sea-Doo?
I love the ones with Aqualad.
Yes.
They're very homoerotic. And I love that he's actually making, you know, seahorses his bitch.
Yes.
And have you ever rewatched those? The seahorse always is angry.
Very angry.
Right, yeah.
Furrowing his brow all the time.
Always. Very angry. So... he needed to be corralled, kind of thing. Another thing that me and my partner laughed, he actually came up with this. He's a very funny man. He's shy, but he's very funny.
Okay.
In some of the old Super Friends, remember they had the bits where they'd have, like, you know, you should eat more fruit and stuff.
Yes, where they were teaching lessons.
Right.
Yes.
Like, Batman and Robin driving in the Batmobile deciding they need a snack, so they go into a farmer's market to buy fruit. What? Like, honestly, like, it's great, but my favorite one that we laugh at, and he came up with this, right? And so I have to give him credit, you know, where credit's due. He's,
sure.
You know, I have to live with the guy, you know. But there was an episode short where they used to teach you little games and stuff you can make. And it's a rainy day, and these kids are sitting there, and suddenly Wonder Woman shows up. Now, she just walks in, okay, which I love. The breaking and entering is good enough. And they'd always say, get me some string, a bottle, and some, you know, pipe cleaners, and I'll be right back to tell you how to make it. All of a sudden, Mike just goes, is she going to take a dump? It's like, if Wonder Woman, first of all, breaks into my house, and then suddenly, like, it's... get that stuff. I'm just going to go look around your mom's panties or something.
Yeah, I'm going to loot through your toys.
Yeah, I got to take a dump because you can't do it on the invisible plane because everybody sees you. I don't know. Now, am I dating myself here? Did you get to see any of, like, H.R. Puffin stuff?
Absolutely.
Stuff like that?
I own the box set to H.R. Puffin stuff.
Nice.
You're
the other guy.
I am the other guy. I adored H.R. Puffin stuff.
Yeah, it's wild.
I mean, Electro Woman and Dinah Girl.
Beautiful, beautiful show.
I never really knew the Bugaloos. I never watched that one
so
much. But I was a big Sid and Marty Krofft person.
Yeah, I still kind of get weepy with Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. I have a shirt that somebody got me. Like, I think I'm the only one who owns this with Sigmund on it. It's just a sad little sea monster, and his family's bullying him, and this, you know.
If there was one I knew best, it was H.R. Puffin stuff.
Yeah,
it's surprising that you just mentioned that out of the blue.
I loved hearing that you owned a box set, because I really thought I was the only one.
No.
I've actually shown it to young people.
Yeah.
Well, younger people.
It took me a
and
long...
they were just mind blown, like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, you know. But it is funny when you think about it. H.R. Puffin stuff's this big dragon, but he had those little feet with the cowboy boots on. If you don't know who H.R. Puffin stuff is, look, I think they have episodes on YouTube.
They've
got to see it. It's crazy that I love that they used to produce this kind of stuff.
I was, for the longest time, you couldn't find it anywhere.
No,
and
no.
It took me, like, as a kid, I honestly... did not know that he was a dragon.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. I didn't know
no
what he
idea.
Was.
I had no idea. I just thought he was this amorphous blob kind of thing with a giant tail and little tiny cowboy boots.
Yeah, that's the freaky thing.
You know, spoke with
really.
A southern drawl.
Yeah, again.
Hey, Jammy.
Yeah.
You know.
And Witchy Poo was brilliant.
Oh, Billy Hayes was fantastic.
You know, I Johnny Depp has done some crazy things in his time, but absolutely. He has actually been trying to make a live-action version again with him as Witchy Boo.
You're kidding.
And I actually want to see that.
I would fully support that.
I would.
As many clunkers as Johnny Depp has made in the past
few years. He has,
he's kind of, you know, he's one of those had it, lost it kind of guys.
Well, he's trying to play everything too quirky.
I think so.
And I think Witchy Boo would be so much fun. Even if it's bad, it's good.
No, absolutely. It would be brilliant.
Yeah, I know we're going off topic, but...
We are.
Lone Ranger, I actually like watching because of the fact that it's not a great movie, but I love... What is Johnny Depp thinking at this moment? Why did he do this in this scene? And then the next scene, it is a fun movie to analyze what he's doing.
It is, you know.
There was a Lone Ranger cartoon, so we're kind of... It works.
Yeah, you know what? And he was part of the Saturday morning block with Tarzan and...
Zorro?
Third one. Zorro, thank you.
Yes, it was.
Oh, I love Zorro. Swashbuckling, that's
such,
right up my alley.
Such a great memories and stuff like that. Lots, I could go on for hours talking
me
about
too.
This, but
and
unfortunately we can't.
No.
We didn't even hit on some
You know what?
Those.
If you're going to mention H.R. Puff and stuff
yes.
and people checking it out on YouTube, I highly recommend looking up the Croft Super Show.
Yes.
That is also that also has a handful of episodes on YouTube.
Does it really?
It does, and it's, you know, if you're in for some nostalgia,
yeah.
it brings you right back to, like, I mean, I was...
Is that Speed Buggy?
Wonderbug.
Wonderbug.
Magic Mongo.
Mr. Shrink.
Dr. Shrink,
yes. And that's Dyna Woman and...
Electra Woman and
which
Dynago.
They're remaking now,
yes,
I heard.
Yes, I heard.
Canadian
yes.
television show.
Yes. Yeah, no.
The dark version.
Yes, well, you know what? It's a modernized version. I don't know how dark it is. I hope they... a little bit of an element of camp remains.
Yeah.
But
the outfits will go.
Their costumes.
They were pretty wild. But
I
love
saw
them
the
still.
Costumes. They're still pretty wild, but they are definitely, you know, the modern version. You know?
So. And, yeah, check out all these ones we've told and so much more, because they are a lot of fun, and I'm glad we have stuff like Teletoon Retro.
Yes.
You know.
We haven't even scratched the surface.
No.
Of what we could have gone into on this topic.
But that's good, because then I can have more shows and we can talk about it more.
Absolutely.
You or anybody in that. Anyhow, we're going to take another break,
sure.
and then we're going to talk about another topic that's near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
Fatherhood. We're back. Sorry, I'm losing it here in a little bit. I'm here with my co-host, Doug Miller.
Thank you.
Didn't know I was going to call you co-host.
I did not. No, I thought I was going to be some form of guest or special guest. Or,
yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was...
Featuring.
Featuring. Yeah, like the rap groups that have like 9 million people when they win the awards and like
That's
all these
right.
people come up. Just because one guy goes, yeah, in the song.
What is that?
I don't know, but I want that job.
I do, too. It pays a lot of money, I'm told.
Yeah, are you enjoying yourself?
I am having a blast.
That's good.
Yeah.
Being a good host as well.
You're tremendous. You're a wonderful, wonderful guy.
That's
and
good.
I'm having a good time.
That's good. I think next time we're over, I'm just going to chat with you. We're going to run the mic and like do
we'll
a series.
Throw us.
Extras. Just because there's just so much to talk about Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday morning cartoons. What's Saturday night? But I love some of his enthusiasm for it and stuff. We're going to change it up a bit. I wanted to talk to you about fatherhood.
Yes.
Because it's something that's really near and dear to your heart.
It is.
But I kind of want to talk to you about your relationship with your dad. Because did you have a good relationship with your dad?
I have a better relationship now than I did growing up.
Which is amazing because of how many people have told me that.
Mm-hmm. And it was the same for him and his father.
Right.
Growing up, they were at odds a lot of the times. And it wasn't until, you know, much later, my dad confessed to me, you know, maybe you know, 10 years back possibly, that it was much the same for my grandfather and him as it was for him and myself. But now the relationship between us, when I was young, I distinctly remember being a very huggy, kissy kind of child. You know, I liked affection. And I wanted to give a lot of affection. And I remember the day that my dad did not want me to give him the kiss goodnight anymore.
Oh.
And a little piece of me died that day.
That, yeah, that's rough.
And I think, you know, I might have been around like the same age as my oldest boy now, which is around 8 or 9.
Did he actually tell you?
Yeah, he kind of said, you know, I think you're a little too old. Like, I mean, he wasn't mean about it. It was very matter of fact, but he basically told me that, you know, this ends today.
Did you guys hug still?
No, not really.
My family didn't hug a lot either. Which, in fact, it wasn't until later. I think I taught my family how to hug.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that a lot of people tell me that now. Like, hugging is so, like, I'd hug strangers if I could. I'd probably get arrested a lot because they probably wouldn't want it, but my father never did. But what's odd is I remember, I don't know if it's my mother was European, I remember kissing my father and mother on the lips.
Yeah.
Like, even when we were teenagers, but we never hugged. And at the time, it never seemed weird, but now I look back at it and I go, it's odd, because I think the kissing is kind of more intimate. Not that there was tongue or anything like that.
I should hope not.
but you know what? We'd kiss on the lips, and I'm like, you know, but which no
is,
hugging.
Which is much more intimate than a hug you would think.
And you know what? I learned about hugging from, like, my friends growing up, and I'm like, and it was almost awkward, you know, the first time you hug, because you're like, is this, like, a bad touch that we were taught, you know? But, that's kind of sad when that happened.
It is, but I will say this, my dad had, a few years back, had a pretty bad cancer scare.
Okay.
And for a while as it goes, when someone is battling cancer, you're not sure if they're going to win or if they're going to lose, and if, you know, you're going to get to keep them for a little while longer or if you lose them.
Is that when you bonded?
It was when, after he kind of went into remission and he beat it, I made a point of saying to myself, I'm going to hug him and kiss him more again. Yeah. Now, forever, until the day he leaves me.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. When I'm leaving, you know, after a visit with my family, with my mom and dad, I will, you know, hug him and give him a kiss on the cheek before I leave.
Good.
You know,
kind of like, deal with it.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Well, and you know what? He actually has accepted it and is reciprocating now.
Nice.
He will give me a kiss on the cheek sometimes when I'm leaving. You know what I mean? And it's a really good feeling. You know what I mean? I'm the spitting image of my father. Really. You know, and I have the same, I carry his name. You know, I am a junior. You know, so there's a special bond between my dad and I now.
Nice.
I think that wasn't there throughout my teen years and even through my early 20s and through my 30s and stuff, you know.
Well, it's good that you got it. Like, because some people don't. Like, and you feel that they are missing a chapter of that, My father and I were kind of close, but he was kind of one of those don't get involved kind of dads, unless you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had it better than my brothers, because we were army brats. They moved around, and I missed a lot of that. So we actually stayed. But we had a Sunday tradition where he took me to the movies. We'd go every matinee. And, like, he gave me my love for movies. And my brothers never had that, because he was older when he had me, when my parents had me. And so I don't think he knew how to, like, throw the ball around or pat you on the back and say, great job. Mm-hmm. So let's go to the movies. And I'm so glad I had that with him and stuff. Do you remember, you know, your dad obviously taught you a lot of things in life. Do you remember something that he taught you that really stands out?
Yeah, something specific, actually, that I have one brother, and he's 11 months younger than me. So we were all, like, we would fight like cats and dogs, but we were also the best of friends, and we are still very good friends to this day, you know.
It's a brother thing.
It is. And the one of the main messages that I took away from what my father would teach me as I was growing up was that you can always rely, you and your brother have each other. You will always have each other.
Nice.
And you need to look out for him as much as he needs to look out for you. If he's in a fight, let's say, then you go jump in there. And you, even if there's 20 guys and you guys are going to fight a losing battle,
that's awesome.
You always stick up for one another. You have each other. You're all each other. You all are all that you have. You know, basically, once me and Mom are gone, you're what's left, you know. And I will take that, and I still live by that.
Excellent.
To this day.
That's an awesome
one. And I have two boys, and even at a very early age, I have already instilled that piece of wisdom that my father taught me.
I was just going to ask you, have you passed that on to your sons?
Absolutely. That was probably one of the first. And I am one of those dads that likes to try and be physically active with them, you know.
Yeah,
and
I'm always seeing your Facebooks, and you're always hanging out with them, and I think it's great.
Yeah, I like to. I am still a big kid in a lot of ways, so I like to do a lot of the things that they like to do, and I want to participate in those things that they do. But of the messages my father taught me, that's the one distinct one that
it's
I can
a great
remember,
one,
and I've instilled it on my kids from a very young age.
Yeah, I'm not saying my father didn't teach me anything, but he was really, like, he didn't really want to get involved too much. Sadly, the things he taught me basically were the wrong things, you know, like how to drink too much. And I learned from that because I saw what happened to him. My mother was the same. She smoked too much, and, like, she literally, you know, died of emphysema, and she smoked right to the very end.
Yeah.
And I learned from that. I shouldn't smoke. So I learned stuff. But I always think the greatest thing my father taught me, and I don't even think he meant it to be a thing, was he was always forced to go to church.
Oh.
And he started hating the church for it. Hmm. And I always questioned. I went through a phase in my 20s, I think everybody does, where I was trying to find my spiritual side. Do I have one?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask, you know, I know we're Protestant, but, you know, weren't you brought up, like, you know, Christian or Catholic? And he told me that he always hated going to church because he was forced. And because he was forced, he learned to really hate it. So he decided he did not want his kids forced.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we decided we wanted to go find God, find Buddha, find whatever we wanted, it should be our journey. And I always respected him for that. Because of the fact that he didn't want to just say, this is what we are, and do it. He said, I want you to figure out what it is. Because I was forced to do it, and I did not enjoy it. Because it just didn't seem it was mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That is actually what Rebecca has kind of started with our oldest, Jacob. We have never instilled any faith upon him. We're both non-practicing Anglican, you know, churchgoers, like, that was the faith that I was brought up in.
Yeah.
When it was time for me to, you know, take my first communion and drink the wine and the unleavened bread and everything, my mom said, you know, you're 16 now, you can, you know, or maybe I was a little younger, but she said, you can make your own choice as to whether or not you want to go to church anymore. And I said, okay, I will see you when you get home. And I never went to church again.
But that's honest.
It
that's
is.
Fair.
And
you know?
I didn't want to go, and the sermons would put me to sleep, but Rebecca is very much a believer in let the children find their faith on their own. And if they decide to, whatever they decide to, we will try to educate them on whatever they have decided they want to gain knowledge about.
Yeah.
So I really commend her for that. She's been very good about that.
That's great.
Another thing, you know, I'll say that I inadvertently learned from my father was partially was how to be funny. My dad is a very, a pretty jovial kind of guy, happy to know you, glad to meet you, very easy to talk to kind of person, and very much a life of the party type of guy, you know, to the point where that when my brother were in our late teens and we were having friends over and stuff, we, between ourselves, between each other, gave him the acronym of DOM, which stands for dirty old man. And not that he was lewd or lascivious to any of the girls that we brought over, but he was very charming toward them. Always seemed to make them laugh. And it would drive me and my brother nuts because it was like, hey, wait a minute. I brought them over so that I could be around these girls, not so they could be around my father. And he
Dad's just, macking on our chicks.
That's right. And he just, he had a very funny and just laid-back, easygoing quality about him that people really enjoy. So, you know, I like to think that I've taken maybe a small amount of that away from him as well.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And it's good. I believe even if you have shitty parents or good parents, you can learn from them. I think sure. we rely too much on, oh, if only I had better parents. But you know what? I think that's a lame excuse.
I think that's a cop-out.
Yeah. Because I know sometimes my brothers will say, oh, I wish they were more supportive. They pushed us in sports or they pushed us in that. I think, you know, they were really old school. When mm-hmm. they had us late in life and they just didn't have the tools to do that. You know, they didn't.
And sometimes it was finance, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when it came to, like, something like that, I had always wished, I remember being, I was always bitten by the theater bug very early. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take tap dancing. My mom, I overheard her say one day that she thought her and my Aunt Sandra would go out and take a tap dancing class. Well, my hand was up. I was, like, out the door. I was like, I'll put bottle caps on my shoes.
Nice.
And my dad was like, no, I don't think you'll like that. No, you know, he wanted me to be a boy and a man's, you know, man's man. And that's, you know, that's fine. That's who my dad was, you know what I mean? But it was also a finance thing. It wasn't so much that he didn't want me to do it. It was that, you know, well, you also want to play baseball and you also want to, you know.
We never think of that as kids.
No, as kids, you think that money, you know, just, it grows on trees, as they say.
Yeah, it's not till later you realize, wow, they really worked hard.
They did, and my mom and dad did, and I'm sure your mom and dad worked very hard.
They did. They spoiled us at Christmas.
Sure,
it was
great
at the time, and then I realized just how much, like, too much. Like, it put them in, you know, like, they max out credit cards to get
us financial straits.
Yeah, and I'm glad, you know, they did that, but at the same time, I look back and think, wow, they really did everything to make our Christmases good.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part of being a father now that you're a dad? There's probably tons, but
there are so many things. But what I think I get the most joy out of is watching my kids be funny, you know? Or be goofy, and I enjoy watching them try, and I, you know, because sometimes it works, and sometimes
that's funny too,
you know, and I enjoy them not trying to be funny, but coming by it honestly.
Yeah.
And it's such a joy to watch them. I laugh at my kids all the time.
Do you see traces of you in it? Does that make you proud when
you
see it a little bit?
You know,
that's
what?
My sense of humor coming through.
Yeah, you know what? When I see my boys being funny or, you know, or just like naturally coming to them, it warms me. You know, it warms my heart and it makes me feel good inside. Like, yeah, that's something I've, you know, that they've seen from me that they've kind of, you know, because I don't think it's inherent in anybody's soul. I think, you know, it's a learned thing.
Right. Because you meet some, you know, parents that are really funny and then the kids are like have no humor.
No sense and of timing.
And vice versa. Sure. You meet like, you know, I've met some very funny young talent, you know, doing, you know, teaching improv, and then you meet your parents and you're like,
you came from this?
Yeah, I know. you were dying for funny.
Yeah.
What's changed about you since you've become a father? What has fatherhood given you? Like, have you seen a change in your personality?
I am not nearly as much of an alcoholic. No, I. You know what?
Is that a nice way to say you don't drink as much?
That's right. That's my attempt at being funny.
It'll be hell week.
You know what? It has matured me. As much as I like to remain a child at heart, having kids sobers you, you know, and not just on a sense where I don't drink as much, which I don't.
Yeah.
I don't drink nearly as much as I used to, and I don't go out carousing and tomcatting around like I used to, you know. I'm, yeah, they they just kind of put me on the straight and narrow, and I guess I really like that about myself.
There's nothing wrong. It's something you found out about yourself.
Before them, I was a little more than reckless. I'm not afraid to say that. I was reckless. I was, you know, perhaps I was a little more carefree, but not always in the good sense, you know. And I'm still pretty carefree, but they've really kind of helped me to, they've shaped who I've become over the past, you know, 8 years, you know.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And in a good way, talking to you here. And I think you can have that kid side of you and mature.
Mm-hmm.
I think you see lots of people who still act like kids in their 40s, 50s. Yep. Like, I still act like a kid, but I do have that mature side to you.
Absolutely.
So I think you can have it.
Yes, you can. And, I mean, that's not to say that I'm still not a huge fan of a good fart joke.
No, well, you probably hear a lot of them with your kids
you
at
know,
the age
right?
of...
And I can get a good laugh from them by telling a good one, you know? Yes. So, I mean, I'm still very, very immature, but not as immature as I used to be.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, we're running out of time, but I had an amazing time.
I had a fabulous time.
Did you live the dream here in my luxurious studio?
You know what? Here in the glitz and glamour of it all, I can hardly believe I'm here.
Yeah, it's gone by quickly. I hope you do come back. I know you have a lot going on, you know, with the family and stuff, but make time. We would love to.
I would be more than happy to come back at a future date if you'll have me back. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Again, Doug Miller. Sorry we don't have applause. We could throw some fake stuff in, but we try not to go for the sound effects too much because I might use the horn way too much. Anyway, I had a great time. Thank you for listening. Again, as always, thank you for giving me some of your time. That's incredible. And I will talk to you real soon.